nonprofit MBA purpose is to provide new business insights and fresh creative ideas for executive directors and their teams that will help them improve their organization. Here is your host, Stephen Halasnik.
Welcome, everyone. My name is Stephen Halasnik. I'll be your host for today's Nonprofit MBA podcast. And for those of you who don't know me, I'm the co-founder of Financing Solutions. And for the last 13 years, throughout the United States, we are the largest provider of lines of credit for small nonprofits in the United States. And if you're interested in looking at a line of credit for your organization, please visit our website at nonprofitmbapodcast.com. And we have a sponsor, as we usually do for the podcast. It's a Raise Fast Fund Online, which is accounting software that's specifically made for small to medium-sized nonprofits. It's not expensive. It also involves a fundraising module, a payroll module. It's all in one single solution. So much better than QuickBooks. And if you're interested in learning more about Araize, please visit their website at araize.com. That's araize.com. And today we're going to be talking about how the Rosendin Foundation decided to award grants. And, you know, it's a very good topic because many of you are all either applying for grants or thinking of applying for grants. And, you know, if you look at the Rosendin Foundation, you'll look at them as they're the customer. And if you are in sales and getting a grant is in essence, you're having to sell your organization. It's really important to understand how foundations look at your application or your organization. And so today I'd like to welcome Jasna Thomas. She's the executive director of the Rosendin Foundation, which was formed in 2020 as a charitable corporation to act as a charitable arm of Rosendin Holdings, for which all charitable giving would be centralized or guided through. This includes Rosendin Electric and Modular Power Solutions. Although the corporation is based in San Jose, California, the foundation provides funding to nonprofit organizations across the United States. Jasna, welcome to today's Nonprofit MBA podcast.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me and the Rosendin Foundation.
So how long have you been at the Rosendin Foundation?
Well, we actually only formed in 2020, so we're pretty new in terms of an organization, and I've been with the organization since its inception. The CEO at the time of Rosendin Holdings had recommended me to be on the board for this newly formed corporate nonprofit, and then I was swiftly elected to the role of president for our 501c3 corporate foundation and have been leading it ever since.
And what was your background before joining the Rosendin Foundation?
So my background is actually, I'm a lawyer by the degrees, as you see behind me. I used to be the head lawyer for the largest construction local in the nation, Operating Engineers Local 3 out of California, representing workers in a four-state jurisdiction in Northern California, Northern Nevada, Utah, and Hawaii. With that role, clearly I did a lot of legal advice for the nonprofit organization. And then I transitioned to Texas and I was working with IBEW doing business development for them. And then I came on board with Rosendin to do business development for the state of Texas for the company. And so I'd been in that role, which is how I got to know the CEO of the organization, Mike Grinewald, and our leadership academy, our folks within the team had already been percolating on making a nonprofit, having our own charitable arm, because Rosendin had been doing giving in our communities for the 100 plus years of our existence, but it had always been done on a very like who the leader of the local office was, they picked who we supported. And we wanted to make our giving to our communities to be a much more strategic and targeted approach where we're really making impactful change. Our mission is to positively impact the community, build and empower people, and inspire innovation. And we do that in a variety of ways, such as the grant making that we're discussing today.
So is this a full-time job for you or do you have... It is. Wow.
Yeah. In April of 2021, the CEO asked me, he was like, you know, we're ramping up. Y'all are doing a great job. I'd really like us to be more focused with our intentionality with the Rosendin Foundation, and gave me the opportunity to stop doing two jobs and instead really focus in on the resident foundation. And since then, we've had some monumental growth in terms of not just grant giving, but we've also rolled out programming as well.
So how big from a money standpoint is the Rosendin Foundation?
We're a couple million dollars in terms of budget. When we started in 2020, we gave out primarily just emergency grants, which are, for us, we have two forms of grants, annual grants and emergency grants. And we gave out emergency grants to, well, we were in the middle of the pandemic. We knew our focus was going to be around health, emotional, nutritional, and occupational. Our populace, our stakeholders, we did a survey voting, and we decided to continue that focus area, which was originally from 2020 to 2023. We've now extended it to 2027. We're in the middle of the pandemic. We recognize when military is being mobilized to support our food banks. And my husband's a judge here in the city of Austin, and he'd come home and say assaults are on the rise. So there were two major factors that we were looking to try to support. One, food insecurity, making sure that our food banks had more support and resources to be able to share with our communities. And second, domestic violence and child abuse prevention, because now you had a bunch of people that were trapped in their home trying to work with their kids. Some areas had alcohol and drugs being delivered to the home, and it was just a tinderbox waiting for an explosion. And unfortunately, that arose in our community with assaults and domestic violence cases going up and people not being so afraid to be able to flee those situations that it took longer for people to reach out to get help, primarily because, well, they were always around their abuser. So they didn't have those opportunities. But I'm totally digressing from your original question. But we gave out $185,000 in emergency grants to support our communities. In 2021, we increased that. We added in now annual grants as well as emergency grants. Emergency grants are smaller amounts, really to solve things that are unbudgeted for, things that you're not planning for, versus our annual grants is for your regular programming, things to support the nonprofit to carry out its mission in furtherance of our focus as well as our mission. And we gave out a little over $500,000 in 2021. In 2022, we increased that giving to a little over $550,000. In 2023, we increased that giving to $640,000. This year, we are planning so we've given to date $1.89 million since we started in 2020. This year, we're planning on to give out an additional $1.3 million. So yeah, we got some funds. We're here now.
And are those, so out of the $1.8 million, what percentage of that is emergency grants versus standard grants?
Significantly smaller, because emergency grants, we allocate about $25,000 annually to emergency. This year, we're going to be increasing that to $50,000. And then we'll be, our annual grants is really where the bulk of our giving is.
I get it. I mean,
because, I mean, how many organizations have a pipe burst, have an AC go out, have a food truck get hit, a storage van, like, issues like that that they aren't already planning for? Not that many. We don't get a huge ton of applications for the emergency grants because it's more of a unbudgeted expense. We're in construction and we recognize you plan, you budget, but things are going to come up, which is why we wanted to be very intentional to have funds reserved to be able to support nonprofits to keep their doors open and to be able to continue their services, versus annual grants are really more for expanding what they're doing, increasing, expanding to different communities, expanding their reach, growing a program, and how can we help them to make what they're already doing on a small scale thrive. We try to do it in two ways. In a lot of aspects, we give out some small annual grants, especially to new organizations to us that we haven't been partnering with, and to see if there's an ability for us to serve as an incubator of sorts, to provide them with resources, provide them with connections. Because what we find, especially working on a national level, is that there's so many nonprofits doing the same work, just in different jurisdictions. And they're like, in reinventing the wheel every single time. But now what we've done, since we now know people in different areas, kind of play matchmaker and introduce them to be like, you're working in pre-apprenticeship. They are too. You're both working at this. You're at the end of the day, you're working for the same purpose. You just have different populaces that you're serving. Similarly, the domestic violence already has a national network to get them connected. Our child abuse prevention agencies also have similarly, but there's other groups where we've been able to create synergies, especially like here in Texas, we support two separate backpacks programs for kids on the weekends, connecting them to learn lessons learned that the other has already had, to share that knowledge rather than working in silos based on nonprofit. Here, we're trying to really maximize how we're really positively impacting our communities by getting more synergy and partnership at the nonprofit level.
You know, during COVID, that was, you know, one of the strategies that people were saying, combine, if your similar services combine. Have you seen it work? There were organizations that are doing the same thing, but in different states. It's hard because the founder of those organizations, what do you say to them? Well, you're out and you're in, you know?
Well, it's not really saying you're out. It's, okay, why don't you develop an advisory board to have these founders do
it could.
Contribute? Because the reality is we need, just like in construction, you need unique, diverse minds. You need young people that are more in touch with what the client is. You need to have the client members be a part of the process. And a lot of the research and data shows that the more you have that community engagement, that piece, the stakeholders all a part of it, the better you're going to be at carrying out your mission. So this is a way that you're able to really combine the best of all worlds and get that those top performers, bring in insight from maybe more diverse populations than your current board is. Because generally, a board is the founder and the founder's friends,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
To tap into your resources, into the community, and really finding the client base that you can truly support. And that's the great, like, I've had so much insight being in this role now for a number of years, where it's like, we do a significant amount of vetting in our process as well, but it's pretty easy to see which ones are going to be really good actors, which ones are going to be maybe with a little help, they can be better, and which ones are just knocking it out of the park every time. Or ones that, good Lord, they got a lot of funding, but then I go to the site visit and they only are serving 7 clients. That's not a good use of resources to impact. So what we try to look for is really how much positive impact can we make with our limited dollars? And on a positive, we've been able to increase our limited dollars every year, but the amount of grants requests, the request for funds is always significantly higher than the amount of money that we have to be able to distribute. So like last year, I want to say it was over $7 million that the ask was. And we had a total of, you know, $620,000 to give out in annual grants. It's like, well, we can't meet the $7 million, but how can we best use our dollars to most positively impact our communities in each area? And for us, because our communities are very different. I don't know how much you know about the foundation, our jurisdiction, but like we're in Oregon up north in both Hillsborough, which is a suburb of Portland, as well as Prineville, more on the coast. Then we're in California. We're in San Jose. We're in San Francisco. We're in Concord. We're in Sacramento. We're down in the Central Valley doing some solar work. We're down in Anaheim and LA. You keep going further south and we're in Arizona and we're in Tempe and Phoenix. You go to Hawaii and we're in IAE. And then you go to Nevada. We're in a bunch of rural areas and we're in Las Vegas. You come to Texas. We're in North Texas and Central Texas, Dallas, Fort Worth, Sherman, Louisville, and then Austin, Pflugerville, and then in Temple as well, which is kind of like where Waco is, if you know Texas geography. Clearly, I know way too much about Texas geography because I'm from here. Then we have North Carolina, where we're in Charlotte, and then we're in Virginia, in Sterling, in Maryland, in Hanover, which is a suburb of Baltimore. And did I miss anybody? I think that's Oh, we're also in Gallatin, Tennessee, which is just outside of Nashville. And now we've got a job working in Huntsville, Alabama. And we've got a new office in, we've got two new offices up in Idaho near Boise, and then also in Reno in Nevada as well. Those are the communities we're
talking about. But you'll give grants throughout the United States, regardless of those locations.
Well, no, it's in those locations.
Oh, it's in those locations.
Okay. We want to give where our people are living and working. We want to impact the community we're working.
Yeah, I gotcha. So basically, let's just go over some statistics here.
Yeah.
And that is, if you're giving out $620,000 and you had 7 million in requests, I don't know if, can you do it this way? So is it one out of every 12 applications are funded?
Because I don't know if I could really do it that way, because it's also like we look at them in terms of how many applications do we get for this location. So, for example, and this is going to be a skewed one, in Charlotte, we received 50 applications.
Yes.
We were able to fund four.
So that would be 8%.
Yeah.
So,
whereas in like Hawaii, we only received, I think, four or five applications, and we funded two of them or three of them.
Okay. So it's a higher percentage. So it depends on the location.
Kind of dependent on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's within the skew of who applies for that area.
So let's talk about let's talk about the organizations that, actually, before I get there, we'll get there. But how many of the organizations that you gave money to, although you're a relatively new organization, so I was about going to ask you how many of the organizations that you gave to money last year, you gave to money to them again?
Oh, that I can share. Actually, hold on one second. Let me just pull down here. So we gave to, of our annual and emergency grants last year in 2023, of our 83 grants that we gave, only 37 were to new organizations.
Okay.
So the bulk of them went to returning partners. We found ways that we could continue to partner and improve with them.
I know you're not going to have the statistic, but anecdotally, if that's the right word, the site visits that you did, what percentage of them did you go on a site visit and you said, you know what, it's not, the grant was good, but not the site visit? And if you were to guess.
I would say at least 10%
of
the site visits. I was like, and some it's like, I was just actually talking to my staff about this. Some it was like, dude, that application read so good. I had so many positive, wonderful thoughts going in. And then I saw what it was. And I was like, oh, they are not talking to anybody else in their community because they are doing duplicate work of what others are doing better. And it's like, and I tried to be, and I was like, have you reached out to this organization? Because they actually do that. And have you reached out to this one? And then it's like, and then I did follow up to see if they did, and they didn't. So it's like, I gave you advice. I gave you information on how, especially that's our incubator stage again, how we're trying to improve how you're doing stuff versus you're just going to come with your hand out.
Yeah. And especially if they had implemented that and then came back to you next year and said, look, I did what you asked me to do.
Yes.
And, you know, I would think that would be high on the list of
And
of
another
the people.
Thing is like, so we use for our vetting, we make sure that the nonprofit's in good standing with the IRS. We make sure they're in good standing with their state. We also look at their Charity Navigator scoring and we look at their Candid GuideStar scoring. And so if an organization, like we may have decided to fund at a lower level based off of some of the transparency scoring, we share that, or we decide not to fund because they don't have any transparency, we encourage them to get it. And those that have been able to increase, like some have had failing scores, and by the time they apply the next year, now their score has gone all the way to the top.
Yeah.
Like that, for me, is an indication that this is an organization that is listening to the feedback and really does want to improve.
Yeah. And by the way, when we look at line of credit, we look at that criteria too. So, you know, so I agree with you. So the not emergency funds that you give, but the funds that you do give, are they restricted funds or unrestricted?
No, they are unrestricted
funds. That's really good.
Yeah. Because we recognize that, you know, you got to pay for staff.
Yeah.
And especially with pandemic, like, and in particular, like domestic violence and child abuse prevention, that staff, the amount of secondhand trauma they're going through, you need to have mental health services for your staff. We will help pay for that stuff because we know that that is critical for you to be able to have the infrastructure to continue to do your services. Now, if you're like, we need teddy bears. Okay, we can buy that too. But like, tell us what you need. You may have government grants that are going to be restricted. Ours are intentionally unrestricted because we want to give the organization the opportunity to be able to use those funds as they need them and what they need them for. Now, you can't, if you tell me in your application you're going to be using it for a certain purpose and then use it for something else, because we do a survey afterwards. We're like, so send us some pictures of what you did, da 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 da. And then if you don't use it for what your intended purpose was and you use it for something completely different and you didn't tell us that you were doing that, guess who's never going to get funded from us again?
Yeah. And that's happened before.
We've had that.
Yeah. So the grants applications that have come in that are filled out that are really well done. Mm-hmm. What do you notice about those versus the ones that are not well done?
So we made our grant making process very, very, I think, simple. Everything that we're asking for, a legitimate nonprofit should already have. If it takes you longer than 30 minutes to an hour to do our grant application, there's something wrong. Because you should know who's on your board. You should have a copy of your 990s. If you have an audit, you should have it. If you've, you should already have a budget. Your programming. You should have the budget for your program and the overall budget. If you don't have these things, and if you're not registered with your state, I worry about you. Because if you don't have the fundamentals, if you don't have your infrastructure in place, this is likely an organization that's going to need a lot more help.
What if you have an organization that has very, very little revenue? They're brand new. They're very, very little revenue. Yes, they filed with the state. Do you still give them money or no?
It depends. It depends on their application. If they tell us a compelling reason, they show how they've been reaching out. There's an organization in particular, Nate's Place, down in the San Diego area. They were brand new to us, but we had information from one of our employees that knew them. So they had a vouch in some aspects, but they used our grant funds to be then the catalyst to be able to get other grant funds. Mm-hmm. Because now we were the proven subject for them that somebody did see the legitimacy of the organization. And with that, like, you don't have to be a 20-year established organization. You could have just been established. We are definitely, and going back to what I was talking about, the incubator aspect, that's what it's for. It's for these smaller, newer organizations, so we can hopefully share some of our expertise in this industry with you. You know, I mentioned I was a lawyer. I used to be the president of the South Asian Bar Association of North America, but I was also the president of the South Asian Bar Association North America's foundation, as well as a local chapter's foundation. And I've been on the board of the Junior League of San Francisco. I was on the board for multiple years. I'm now a sustainer. So it's like, a lot of our people on our board have been board members for nonprofits. We have expertise in helping to run those nonprofits on the board side. And then, you know, now clearly in my president role, I'm running it on a day-to-day basis as well as my exclusive job instead of as a volunteer thing that I did on the side. I mean, I've been volunteering and serving on board since I was in middle school and high school. I was like the co-chair of the Kids Way campaign for the United Way of the Texas Gulf Coast. So it's like there's a lot of expertise and knowledge that's been gained from all these years of service that we want to try to share with our communities so we can better improve it. You know, it's that whole train the trainer concept. If we can teach, then they can do even more. And that's what we try to do. And it segues into the programming that we're doing, because we also run a free construction camp for middle schoolers. And it's that same concept. If we teach people, then they're going to be able to do so much more. So we run this camp called TRF Camp Build, where it's a week-long hands-on construction camp where boys and girls and non-binary in middle school get to learn how to safely work with tools. They start having confidence and get built and empowered to have the understand that they have the knowledge and the capabilities and the skills to be able to do these things. They understand the difference between like an impact and a drill, to be able to build a concrete stepping stone, to be able to wire a lamp, to use a torch and build a copper stand to like hold jewelry or hats. And we have them run, operate heavy equipment, small pieces. And then they build a doghouse with a detachable roof, and they paint it. And the doghouse they build as a group, and we actually donate it back to the local community. So the understanding that building isn't just for yourself. Yes, it's developing skills that nobody can ever take away from you, but it's also that you're still giving back to your community and recognizing that every aspect of your life, you can positively impact your community. Whether you're a little tyke, whether you're reading one of our coloring books, you can learn more. And our whole goal is to really create more opportunities for our communities.
What percentage of the time do grant applications come in filled out where the nonprofit that it was applying doesn't really match the mission of the of your foundation? Like, well, you know, I know it's a guess. You say 10%.
I would say 25% of the applications received do not match our grant guidelines. So they're in clear violation of a guideline and they're still applying. So it's like, come on, you go to our website, we clearly tell you what we fund and what we don't fund. You are in the do not fund you're still applying.
Have you ever spoken to them and said, why did you apply?
So oftentimes they find our information through like a grant research tool, and they're just blindly applying. And that's where it's like, if you don't take the time, like again, I said, 30 minutes to an hour, it's not a lot of time. Look at our website, see what we do, see how you align. Is it a good fit or not? Because then you can write to that. One of our aspects also is we do service days where our employees, our family members, our trade partners, we go out and volunteer in our community. An important aspect of our grant application, what volunteer opportunities do you have? The best way I think a nonprofit can really try to create a partnership with us, reach out to us for volunteers.
Yeah.
Let us have a taste. Let us know what impact you're making in our community. So that way, when your application comes in, my grant making committee is like, oh, I volunteered at that. That was really great. It was great to see those kids' faces or helping with the elderly or the disabled or veterans group, whatever the category is, because we do not discriminate in terms of who we're helping. And it's really kind of customized, like every area, we kind of do different things based off what our people in the area want to support. So like in Arizona, we're very, very kid focused. So if you're doing things outside of children, we likely aren't going to fund you. But you're going to know that if you come and, you know, engage with us. But if you don't come and engage with us and then you present something that's out of that scope, we're likely going to say no. So another good way to figure out if we're a good fit for you, look on our website where we show you every one of the 221 organizations that we have supported since our inception in 2020. Are you like any of these, especially in your geographic area? Because you'll start to notice things like, oh, in Oregon, we like to do stuff with animals and people and children. We like to do stuff in like Charlotte with helping communities, helping veterans, like recognizing, you'll start seeing patterns. And if you spend the time just looking at the information we've already provided you on our website, you can really see if this would be a good fit and worth your time to apply. Now, granted, 30 minutes to an hour isn't a lot of time. But just take that little bit of time before you spend it on the application, just looking at the potential grantee. What information are they already sharing with you? Just decide, could this be a good synergy, a good long-term partnership? Because when we have that partnership, when we see, oh, this is a really good fit, our employees like volunteering with this organization, we can see the tangibility. Like we had one of our long-term partners, like they had a pipe burst. They applied to us for an emergency grant. We were able to give them funding. We reached out to our partners in the construction industry. You know, one of our friends, DPR, they were like, okay, we'll take care of the drywall. We worked with our team so that way we reduced the cost of that repair. We gave them the money for what cost that would have to be paid for. And then we got them other resources donated for free. And that's the power of the community that we are building at the Resident Foundation.
The now you came on this podcast. You know, most people come on the podcast because they have a purpose. Was your purpose to get more people applying?
I think it's twofold. One, make sure people know that we exist, because if you do fit within our mission and our focus area and in our geographical areas, you should apply. And two, well, kind of to weed out those people that just kind of blindly applied, everybody to be like, let me give you some candid advice. Nobody likes that.
Yeah.
The grantor has to go through all those applications, and now you're just like wasting what limited time they have. So recognize, like, time is one of the most valuable resources for the nonprofit as well as the potential funder nonprofit that's supporting you. And then second, just to, you know, share about our camps, because they're kind of cool and would love to have the clients of the nonprofit bases that are listening in to your podcast to know about them and share this free resource that could potentially help their client base and their client base's children to be able to gain power. A lot of what I see in our nonprofit industry is people need services because they have lost power, not electricity, but like mental power. They don't have the power in their relationship. They're not in a relationship where it's even partnership. They are not the parent. They do not have the finances. They don't have the employment stability. They may not have the English language skills. They may not have the resources and connections because they're a new immigrant. If we use the power of all of us coming together, we can then really improve the lives of those clients that hopefully they won't be clients anymore. And they have now progressed where they too are doing great things in our communities.
Well said. Oh, I like that. Well, that was really kind of all the time we have for today. It was a good way to kind of end it on a positive note like that. I'd like to thank so very much Jasna Thomas from the Rosendin Foundation for coming on today's podcast. And if you like today's podcast, please feel free to share it with a friend and also subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. We have so many great guests. We have like over 300 podcasts. If you just like listen to the Nonprofit MVP podcast, I'm going to tell you right now, your organization is going to get better. And if you like today's podcast, please give us a 5-star review. It really continues to expand. We're the top 1% of podcasts listened to in the nonprofit space. And of course, if you're looking for a line of credit for your nonprofit, you could take a look at our website at nonprofitmbapodcast.com. Jasna, if anybody wants to get in touch with you or find out about the application process, how would they go about doing that?
So you can go to our website, which is www.therosendin foundation.org. And from there, you can find out all the information you need.
Great. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me. I appreciate it.
So, you know, I want to tell everybody out there and I want to thank you, not so much for listening. I thank you for that, but I just want to remind you, thank you for trying to make the world a better place. But I just want to remind you all that you can't be of any help to your employees. You can't be of any help to your cause. You can't be any help to your family and your friends if you don't take care of yourself first. And I know that people in the nonprofit space are very, very giving. But you can only do that if you take care of yourself first. And you should be thinking about that every single day. What do I need to do for myself today? Rather that be exercising, eating right, sleeping right, meditating, praying, whatever it is that you need to do for yourself to keep you whole. Because unfortunately, the taking care of these world problems is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you need to recognize that burnout always happens, can happen. So please take good care of yourself. Other than that, I want to wish everybody a happy day. And thank you for listening to the Nonprofit MBA podcast. See ya.